Hello and welcome to Exploring Magnuson Park. I'm your host, Benjamin Warren. We have a special episode for you today. I am meeting with my guest, who I'm very excited to be speaking with, in the park rather than at the studio. We are at the Finn Project, From Swords into Plowshares, and that's because my guest is none other than the sculptor himself, John T. Young. John, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you have us here at your art installation, giving us kind of a walkthrough and overview of everything we are going to be seeing. I, again, am very excited for this because the Finn Project, to me, is kind of an iconic piece of art in Magnuson Park, and I'm really excited to be learning more about it from you and sharing that with our listeners. So we are kind of at the plaque, the start, if you will, of the art installation. What can you tell us about what we're looking at here and share what you will about the Finn Project?
Sure. Well, it all starts here at the plaque. The big bronze plaque at the entryway near the swimming beach tells you the title of the work, which is, you said, the Finn Project, From Swords into Plowshares. It was done 25 years ago. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
And I'm the artist, the creative designer of the project, and Max Gervich was the producer. He was a fantastic fellow who helped raise the funding for this work. Not a single Seattle tax dollar was used to pay for this 500-foot-long sculpture. It was all done by donations, and I'll explain that as we go along. So this project has four or five levels, layers of meaning, and the first, of course, is from the Old Testament, they shall beat their swords into plowshares and turn their spears into pruning hooks. And that appears twice in the Old Testament, in Micah chapter 4 and Isaiah. And it's all about taking weapons and turning them into art, or plowshares. In this case, it's art. And this is the first time the Defense Department has ever given an artist nuclear warship parts to turn into art. It's a kind of a dubious distinction, but I'm thrilled that they allowed it to happen. So a lot of people confuse these and they think that they are airplane rudders. They are not airplane rudders. These are the Fairwater diving plane fins from nuclear submarines. Some of them are attack submarines, some of them are ballistic submarines, and I'll point those out as we go along. They are probably the most powerful defensive tool in our arsenal. And the beauty of them is that not a single shot was ever fired in anger by any of the submarines that are represented here. There are 11 subs here, 22 fins. These Fairwater diving plane fins occur horizontally on the conning tower of each sub. And I just flipped them vertically. And the first layer, of course, is swords into plowshares. The second layer is that they're arranged in such a way that they are reminiscent of a orca pod on steroids. These are like giant orca fins. Some of them are 12 feet high. Each one weighs about 10,000 pounds. Some are buried deeper than others to give the illusion that they're breaching or that they're babies. Another layer of meaning is that this is a memorial to the Cold War submariners. They, until this point, and when this piece was made in 1998, they were not allowed to speak about their service. It's a secret service. And then they were given permission to talk about it, and I was given permission to use the fins to help remember them. They kept our country at peace. They're the most powerful weapon in the world that managed to keep our country and our world at peace. And as we go through, I'll tell you some of the stories. Clearly, the biggest adversary here was the Soviet Union. These are all Cold War submarines. And there's some hilarious stories about how they interacted at sea. So anyway, I think that covers the plaque. All of this was donated to the city. No tax dollars were used. The city donated the park for this purpose. The Navy donated the fins, and there are about 10 donors that you'll see their names on the plaques that donated the installation costs. So this was free to the taxpayer, and that was very important to me to do. I didn't want to use more taxpayer dollars, more than the dollars we already paid for these billion-dollar submarines. Mm-hmm. So it's a gift to the public.
You mentioned the distinction of kind of being the first artist that was provided nuclear submarine materials. How did that come to you?
Well, I don't think I'm just the first. I think I'm the only. A friend of mine, a gentleman named Don Simmons, was part of the Bremerton Naval Shipyard, the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard in Bremerton. And he was the Navy liaison between me and the Pentagon, because this had to be approved by NAVSEA Command, which is at the Pentagon. And he went to the Navy and asked them if we could, they were cutting up submarines, if we could use the fins for this project. And he said, you know, this will be really good PR for the Navy. And they said, no. And well, this would be really good PR for the veterans. This will save the Navy money. Oh, yeah, let's do that. So anyway, by giving them to me and this project and the city, they actually eliminated the cost of having to recycle these, which turns out to be impossible, because the steel is embedded into a syntactic ceramic foam that's inside these fins.
Okay. So
to prevent vibration and provide structural strength. And that's why we won the Cold War, because of the syntactic foam. And I'll explain that as we
move along. You let's ready? Head in.
Ready
yeah.
to move? Okay. We can start right here with the first one.
Okay.
So you can see this is not hollow like an airplane wing. It's solid. And you may be able to hear that. And each submarine fin has a plaque on it. And there are three major pieces of information on the plaque. The first one is the name and number of the submarine. So this one is SSN, what does that say?
638 Whale.
638, and it was called the Whale. And then the second line is the name of an orca whale in our Northwest pods. Every single one of the whales is named by the scientists, and they can be distinguished by their white spots. Mm-hmm. They all have a different spotting pattern. And then the third one is the name of the donor that helped fund this. And each donor back then gave, I think, about $7,500. So we were close to $300,000 by the time this project was done to install. There's a 6 foot by 6 foot by 12 foot footing under each one, which holds them up in earthquakes. So every fin is plaqued. And I got a lot of flack for the plaques. Artists in the community said, what are you going to plaque every single element of a figurative sculpture, like the arm and the leg? And I said, no, this is important to recognize the Navy and the people who gave money to do this. And it also has the wonderful effect of slowing everybody down. You know, they stop, they bend over, they read the plaques, they move on, and it gives them a better understanding of the work. So I'm glad I persisted with that.
Yeah, and that call to the orca pods, as you mentioned, in the area. And this one here, this first one after the plaque, is named Faith. Now, did the donors pick these? Did you pick them from the Orca Pod. How did the names actually get placed on these?
That's a great question. I picked the names.
Okay.
And this one is called Faith because Ken Elhadef, who is a well-known philanthropist in Seattle, donated the first check. Mm. And he had faith in me and Max that we were going to be able to pull this off. And that's why he has the first fin, too.
Okay.
He was the first. So Faith is carefully chosen. And you'll see some of them are more carefully chosen than others. But, you know, there are 22, maybe 24 orca whales represented here. You'll see.
Yeah. All right.
And then one other thing about these. We talked a little bit about the syntactic foam inside, the ceramic foam.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are two different kinds of steel on here. This is regular steel on the sides, but on the nose and on the tail, these are high yield 80 steel elements. And these are all handmade, by the way, not made on a machine. And we used to play games with the Soviets. We never fired a torpedo at them, never a shot in anger, never a missile. But we would sneak up to them because they couldn't hear us because of the syntactic foam inside. No vibration, no cavitation. The screws, the propellers were carefully designed. And then we'd bump them with these high-yield 80 leading edges, and we'd leave scars on the subs, and you can just imagine, we'd scare the pants off
of
them. And there are scars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look, you'll see some of the scars that I kept.
Well, other than this project here in Magnuson Park, do you have other artwork displayed throughout Seattle?
Oh, yeah. There are 8 pieces in the Seattle metro area, and I have 47 pieces across the country.
Okay.
Another 8 are in Colorado. For some reason, Colorado really likes my work. And in Florida, too. There are 3 in Florida, and they're scattered around. There's a sister project to this fin project in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got, this has 22 fins. It also has 22 fins. It's also 500 feet long. And in Miami, they allowed me to put fins in the water.
Oh,
so
okay.
The pod is, these are more like dolphins coming out of the water. So this one is from the Pargo, Leo, who funded this installation, the DeLongas. And they all have unique fittings like this. I'm not sure what this one does, but some of them are for safety nets. That one's got a good scar on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the installation in Florida, was that a similar process in securing the fins for that project as well, going
yes.
through the Navy and getting that all worked out?
That came after this one. Mm-hmm. The success of this one generated permission to do the one in Miami. And it's on the 79th Street JFK Causeway, which is between Miami and Miami Beach in
yeah.
Pelican Harbor Park. And it's a great park. I mean, it's also a wonderful site. What's great about this piece here is that this used to be a Navy base, and these mm-hmm. are Navy artifacts. In Miami, they have dolphins, and it's on the JFK Causeway. Kennedy was our Cold War president, then also kept the world at peace
right.
because of his dramatic politics. So both sites are very appropriate. The mm-hmm. sites are carefully chosen.
Okay.
So this one you can see on the top, it has a fitting, a screw-in fitting, threaded fitting, and that's where the sailors would screw in safety lines in order to clean the barnacles off of these.
Okay.
So you'll see a number of them have that. And that's how the veterans come out here sometimes on Memorial Day and on Veterans Day. And they try to find their sub based on the fittings and the plaques. And it's quite a moving experience, actually.
And what was the thought process behind leaving some of those fittings on the fins?
It's the truth.
Okay.
It's absolutely the way they came off the sub. You know, here's another one, slightly different. This one's pretty low. What I like about this one, I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but it's low enough so that you can climb on it and get your picture taken on top.
Yes, just be careful.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the entire installation is a great opportunity to get pictures in the park. And then this shorter one right here specifically, being careful as you're working your way around it.
Well, the nice thing also is that this is on the way to the dog walk park.
Mm-hmm.
So people use the trail with their dogs. And in the summer, it's a great place to throw your frisbee. Kids play hide and seek. So these three fins were donated by one donor, my prep school roommate, Bob Fisher. And he is the owner of The Gap and Banana Republic, and he donated three fins, each one in honor of his three children. So, and they're in order, chronological order in terms of age. By the way, the plantings, many of the tree plantings were designed and done by me as well.
Oh, okay.
So the fins are using this, for example, as an island to swim around.
Gotcha.
And these trees were much shorter 20 years ago. They've grown up to the side of the fins, but these were little trees when we planted them. Now they're almost fully grown. In the spring, in a few months, those will be apples, crab apples. And I think we have a cherry in here somewhere.
Was there a particular reason why this section of the park was chosen for the installation?
Yes. That's a very interesting question, actually. This was completely overgrown with blackberries and Scots broom. And it was controversial to use it because we had to clear all that stuff off. And that was controversial because the Audubon Society claimed that this section of the park was used as a nesting ground for birds during their migration. And clearly we did not want to interfere with the migration of birds. So someone in the Parks Department came up with the brilliant solution. Well, look, we're gonna mow this section, but we're gonna let another section overgrow.
Okay.
So the birds can find a place.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that section is where the lakes are, the little lakes down the road.
Yeah.
So that was a brilliant compromise by a Parks Department member, which enabled us to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you a story about this one.
Yeah.
So we're approaching the biggest fin of the project, and it comes off of the John Adams. That's the name of the submarine. And you'll notice it's an SSBN, which means it's a ballistic nuclear sub. This would carry 22 nuclear missiles, each one of which could knock out a city like the size of New York or Moscow.
Mm.
And it had 22 of them, and that's why they're 22 fins. And Sparky was the name of a whale. I think he's still alive. And Sparky was the name of the radio operator on board Navy ships. They would nickname them Sparky or Sparks. And this was donated by my mother. In honor of my father, who was a lieutenant in the Navy. He served his Navy time in Boulder, Colorado, as far from water as you can get. But he helped decode the Japanese secret code. And anyway, about 5 years after I installed the work, I got an email. And it said, Dear Professor Young, my name is Don Sparks. And I served aboard the John Adams. And I had a moment with your fin project the other day. So wow. You can imagine what a coincidence
it
must have been for him. Anyway, the best view of the project is back here. So if you look back here, you see them, you see their noses. They're coming at you here. Mm-hmm. And I love this shot. This is the where I photographed the pieces. So to all your listeners, if you want the best shot from the artist's perspective, visit the John Adams and look back.
That is a great recommendation. It is a stunning view from this angle, especially with the water to your left as you're looking back. It really does mimic those orca pods. Now, the large one here with the SSBN, where would its partner fin be in relation to it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I honestly don't know. The Navy took them off submarines in Bremerton off of these giant cranes, and they put them in railroad cars, open railroad cars, and then they were saving them to give away or to melt down, or I don't know what they were trying to do. They couldn't melt them down because the syntactic foam was carcinogenic when it was heated. So they commissioned somebody to think about how to get rid of these. Brian Zetlin is the guy who told me about them. And I think he was going to put them in the ocean as artificial reefs. Mm-hmm. So the other SSBN fin might be at the bottom of the sea.
All right, so still that connection to the water.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right.
Anyway, do you have a minute? Should we go up Kite Hill?
Yeah, let's keep going.
So this lead fin right here was donated, and it's plaqued in honor of Max Gervich, who was my good friend, major Seattle philanthropist, and he helped me with this project. He's got the lead fin.
Well, with so many projects in Seattle, across the U.S., and certainly kind of a storied career as a sculptor, do you have any advice for aspiring or beginning sculptors?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the best advice I can give an aspiring sculptor is find a way to work in your garage or your basement and just keep going. You're going to need to support yourself somehow. I did it through teaching, but there are many other ways. And don't stop. And you know, the key is to get people interested in your work. So you have to schlep your portfolio around to galleries and grants, and it's a hard life. It's a challenging life. I thought the best thing was to get a master's degree and then get a teaching job. It provides you with the most amount of income. By the way, we're climbing a hill.
So, yes, going up Kite Hill here.
The most amount of income for expectations that you will continue working on your art. At least that's how I did it.
Okay.
All right, let's turn around.
Yes. All right, there it is.
So we're on near the top of Kite Hill, and we're looking at 22 nuclear submarine fins. The installation is 500 feet long, which is the length of one of these subs.
All right, a very good visual representation there of just how large those subs are.
They're enormous.
Yeah.
And they have 130 crew. Oh. Until recently, they were all male. The Navy honored me and gave me a ride in the USS Los Angeles. Hmm. And made me an honorary submariner in a little ceremony. And we were floating around or below Daybob Bay, which was pretty exciting. And what I saw these guys, they would hot bunk. So they'd have a room with 9 bunk beds in it, and 27 men would sleep there on 6-hour shifts. Hmm. So, you know, the beds were pre-warmed every time you went there. And then Some bunks were between torpedoes. They would jog up and down. I mean, if you had 500 feet, you could actually get a workout. Mm-hmm. It was pretty impressive how these guys lived. And they can stay underwater for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
The only limiting factor is food. You know, if they have enough food. Mm. So it's a pretty, it's a shocking special force. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that we have it. And what a great park this is.
It is.
I mean.
I agree with you there.
Oh, my God. You're doing the good work of sharing it with everybody on the air. It's just one of the best parks in the country.
Well, I agree. I agree. And thank you so much for taking the time to teach all of us about one of the these amazing pieces of art in the park. Sharing your story, the story about the Ark. I really appreciate all of that. I have one final question for you.
Sure, go ahead.
Is there a song that you would associate with the Finn Project?
I would associate the Finn Project with the Song of Whales. And you can find those on the internet. They're beautiful and haunting. And the whales are so intelligent. Mm. They're communicating with each other. They have language. And they talk to each other, and that's how you'll hear it. You're not going to understand what they're saying, but they do.
Oh, well, that is the perfect type of music for this. Again, going back to these fins representing in one of those pieces, one of those representations, a pod of orcas, and standing up here on Kite Hill, looking kind of down on them, they very much do resemble a pod of orcas. So perfect song. John, thank you so much again for being here and for speaking with me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Exploring Magnuson Park. My guest today was John T. Young, a Seattle artist whose sculpture, The Finn Project, From Swords into Plowshares, can be seen at Magnuson Park. Make sure to check it out the next time you're at the park, and keep an eye out for more of John T. Young's artwork around Seattle. Some upcoming events happening in Magnuson Park: the Lunar New Year Celebration Night Market will be taking place on Saturday, February 10th from 4 to 10 p.m. at Hangar 30. This event will showcase 125 local merchants and food trucks and features an illuminated maker's market as part of the Year of the Dragon celebration. This event is only for individuals 21 and older. Check out 206nightmarkets.com for more information and to get your tickets in advance. Also, the Magnuson Park Gallery will be hosting Understanding Oil, Fong Bates' student exhibition, from Saturday, February 10th through Friday, March 1st, with an artist reception Saturday, February 17th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Magnuson Park Gallery in Building 30. Check out spaceatmagnuson.org for more information. A special thank you to everyone who contributes to Space 101.1 FM. It's your donations that make this show and all of our programs possible. If you'd like to contribute, want to learn more about the station, are looking for a schedule of our programs, or would like to listen online, visit space101fm.org. Stay with us for more amazing programs coming up today, and don't forget to tune in again next Thursday at 2 p.m. for more Exploring Magnuson Park. I'm your host, Benjamin Warren, broadcasting from Space 101.1 FM, the coolest radio station in the galaxy. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you at Magnuson Park.
Walking in my neighborhood, well, the sun is shining and it sure feels good. Walking